The war had gone on so long, and it seemed that one couldn't accept the fact that the war would ever finish.
We had this news, the fact that at 11 a.m. on the 11th of November, hostilities were going to cease, and that there was to be no firing from then onwards. And so we sat round, and we couldn't believe it. It didn't seem that this could be really happening.
We knew that things were getting pretty critical. We knew that we were doing well, and nobody wanted to cop out on one when the war might be ending tomorrow sort of thing. It was the wrong time to get wounded or hit or anything, you see, so we were pretty careful.
I think everybody at the final moment didn't want to do any more damage.
The war would be over by Christmas, albeit Christmas 1918. Ancient empires had fallen. Russia was gripped by civil war. Central Europe was in turmoil. Britain and France were victorious, but exhausted. And the men who had endured the searing heat, the constant mud, the pervasive cold, the rats, the howl of shells, the loss, the laughs, the iron grey sea, the jagged ridges, open cockpits, the wire, the sleet, the mess tin grub, the filth, fear and ferocity, would now face a very different challenge. The return. For 4 years, I have been lucky enough to track the course of the war through the voices of the men who knew it best. Life will be emptier without them.
The war's over. We couldn't believe it. We just couldn't believe it. It was so unreal. You know, we'd got into the habit of feeling, oh, well, I suppose sometime this shall end. Eventually it sort of sunk in, and then, of course, they're naturally like, oh, where do we go from here? A terribly empty feeling.
I remember vividly one fella in the trenches. He was a few yards away, and he was looking over the top, just got his head, and a sniper caught him right in the head. And his last words were, he was calling for his mother. And my mind goes back to that chap who was killed at that trench.
Tens of thousands of men were killed or wounded after it became clear that the armistice was imminent. After the negotiations were complete, it was decided that the fighting would end at the 11th hour on the 11th of November. This dramatic flourish came at a high price. There was heavy fighting right up until that time. Some men had the taste for combat. Some ambitious commanders even ordered attacks. Tragically, many fell in the last hours and minutes before the armistice stilled the battlefield, hit by the last of billions of bullets and shell fragments. Private Jim Fox was with the Durham Light Infantry.
About 10 o'clock, one came down and killed a sergeant of ours. It'd been out since 1915. He's killed with a shrapnel, you know, and thought that was very unlucky. To think he'd served 3 years till 1918, nearly 4 years, and then to be killed within an hour of the armistice.
The morning of the armistice, and we're going through a French village or a Belgian village, and the town crier, or village crier, was saying something about La Guerre Finie. And I didn't understand this, so my pal understood the French lingo. He said, hey, this fella said, the war's over. I said, he's gone mad. He says, listen, he's saying the war finishes this morning. Anyhow, he was quite right. About an hour after that, the officer driving through this village, and he stopped his car and told us the war was going to be finished at 11 o'clock that morning.
Did you feel worried that you might get killed at the last minute, so to speak?
Yes, because unless you've been in the forces, you don't know the feeling you have. If you were next on leave, and I was next on leave in our sector, fate stepped in, said, you're not going on leave. And it's always a worrying time.
Bill Smedley had a very close shave with only minutes to go.
Everybody had the wind up. And, of course, when 10 to 11 came, I was really windy. He started shelling one or two long-range stuff, expending his stuff instead of carrying it back, getting rid of it. And I just threw myself on an embankment. And all of a sudden, I just felt a crack on my steel helmet. Jerked me head a bit and give me a bit of headache, but didn't penetrate the helmet itself, the crown.
On the 11th of November, I was sitting at a table with an English staff officer, and he had a large, old-fashioned hunting watch, which he put on the table, and he watched the billets going round.
Keith Officer spoke to the BBC in 1964 for the Great War series.
The only disturbing thing was that we kept on getting messages from a German unit who were afraid that people opposite then hadn't had instructions that they were to stop fighting on the 11th at 11 o'clock. Because they said the British troops opposite them were very aggressive and were giving them a lot of trouble. Anyway, 11 o'clock came, and I remember he shut his watch up and said, I wonder what we're all going to do next. And that was very much the feeling of everyone. What was one going to do next? To some of us, it was practically the only life we'd known. We'd started quite young.
I actually sent out the order for the armistice to the troops. So after breakfast, we rode towards the city.
William Ray was a Canadian officer on the Western Front in 1918.
And we carried on into Mons and got to the main street, which was filled with the inhabitants, screaming their heads off and shouting. And as I got to the town hall in the main street of Mons, the church clocks chimed. It was 11 o'clock.
After 4 years and 3 months, the war against Germany was finally over.
11 o'clock, right on the dot, finished. Right on the dot. Not another thing.
There had been one German machine gun unit giving our troops a lot of trouble, and they kept on firing until practically 11 o'clock. At 11 o'clock, the officer stepped out of their position, stood up, lifted his helmet and bowed to the British troops, fell all his men in the open in front and marched them off. And I always think it was a wonderful display of confidence in British chivalry, because the temptation to have fired on them must have been very great.
The armistice was a negotiated surrender by the Germans. Those negotiations were hastily concluded by the new revolutionary German government. It was signed at 5:20 a.m. on the 11th of November, but communicating the fact that the war would end at 11 o'clock to every last unit was not straightforward. George Jameson.
We were told to move on to a certain village on the day of the armistice. When one of the drivers shouted up to somebody, he said, there's a sign on that thing marking somebody's headquarters and it says the war's over. Don't believe it. Nobody would believe it. The war couldn't be over. It had been on for years. Nobody would believe it could finish. He said, it's a fact. It says there the war was over. So somebody rode back and read this thing and it said, as from 11 o'clock this morning, hostilities have ceased. And we thought, well, my God, Father. Eventually it sort of sunk in, and then, of course, they're naturally like, oh, where do we go from here? We had just that sort of feeling as though we'd been sacked, we'd been kicked out of a job.
How did you feel in yourself about the end of the war?
Relieved. Relieved. I had always, I mean, this consciousness of any moment might be your last was never away from my mind, even when I was enjoying myself. But mainly the answer to your question is relieved.
For those back on the home front in November 1918, the celebrations produced mixed emotions. Peter Hart of the Imperial War Museum spoke to Nurse Bird and George Ashurst in the 1980s.
What did you feel when the armistice was announced in 1918?
Quite frankly, I wondered what I was going to do. The hospital had been a part of my life for 4.5 years, and I was a little frightened of the outside world.
Do you remember anything about the actual armistice day itself?
Oh, yes, everyone went mad, of course.
What do you remember about November the 11th?
Well, I remember on that particular morning, the whistles started blowing and the bells started ringing. They were laughing and dancing and singing. And I was like an outsider standing there. That's what I felt like, because it didn't that much effect on me, the war finishing.
Those in uniform attracted a lot of attention that morning back in Britain. Brian de Courcy Ireland was in Edinburgh, Ernest Hancock in Luton.
Well, the whole of Princes Street was simply just a mass of people, and anyone who was in uniform, mostly sailors, was rather overwhelmed by the young ladies. And it was just a general mass of enjoyment. We had rather difficulty getting away.
The sirens were sounding all over Luton and Vauxhall Motors about 11 o'clock. And then, to my horror, a sea of females, girls and women, came out of the factory and descended upon me like a hive of bees. And, of course, being in full naval uniform, they used me as a target to express their joy. They kissed me, they tried to pull my buttons off, they nearly had my trousers off, and I fought like a maniac because I didn't know what this was about. And when, of course, they told me armistice had been declared, I fought back and kissed a lot of them.
It was a kind of anti-climax. We were too far gone, too exhausted, really, to enjoy it. All we could do was just go back to our billets. There was no cheering, no singing. We had no alcohol. At that particular day, we had no alcohol at all. And we simply celebrated the armistice in silence and thankfulness that it was all over. And I believe it happened. That happened quite a lot in France. It was such a sense of anticlimax. It was such a... We were drained of all emotion, really. That's what it amounted to, you see.
Anticlimax, exhausted, thankfulness, drained. Clifford Lane talks for millions of men and women. Glad to be alive, overwhelmed by their exertions. Many struggling with loss or injury, physical and mental. All now faced a void. The certainty of a soldier's life, with its periods at the front, rest, training and leave, may have had its terrifying moments, but it was regimented in a way that this new reality was not. Many were young. They knew only a barked order from their section commander, the tot of rum in their tea at the morning stand to, their turn on the fire step as sentry, the refilling of sandbags. In short, they knew only war.
A wonderful feeling that, and yet at the same time it was sad because we'd left so many chaps there that had been at their factory all the time, and just at the last week they were killed. That was the sad part about it, to think that just a few more days and they would be home on leave as well. That was the very sad part about it all. But there it was, it's war.